How did a pacifist end up receiving the Victoria Cross, Britain's highest medal for bravery? Well, it happened in the First World War, and it happened because this amazing hero, who'd volunteered to join the army in the opening months of the war, had a deep religious calling, which made him lay down his rifle and pick up a stretcher. In many ways, his story has some similarities to Desmond Doss in the film Hacksaw Ridge. It takes all sorts to become heroes. Hi, I'm Chris Green, the History Chap, telling stories that bring British history to life. And today, I want to share with you the story of this humble 5'4" hero from Burton-on-Trent in Staffordshire. William Coltman, VC, was a stretcher bearer on the Western Front. His bravery wasn't just rewarded with the Victoria Cross, but 2 Distinguished Conduct Medals and 2 Military Medals as well, which is a highly impressive record for a deeply religious pacifist. William Coltman was born just outside the town of Burton-on-Trent in 1891, the youngest of 9 children to his parents, Charles and Anne. On leaving school, he worked as a market gardener and was registered in the 1911 census as a farm servant. It was around this time that William became a member of the Plymouth Brethren. He remained a deeply religious man for the rest of his life, and his faith would inspire his subsequent actions during the First World War. As an aside, another notable member of the Brethren was the commander of the Chindits in World War II, General Lord Wingate. In 1913, William married Eleanor May Dolman, a domestic servant and 2 years his junior. Married life, however, would be interrupted by the First World War the following year. In January 1915, the 5'4", 23-year-old William Coltman volunteered to serve his country in the First World War. Just to make it absolutely clear, Coltman was not a conscientious objector. He volunteered to serve, and he joined the 6th Battalion of the North Staffordshire Regiment, the Prince of Wales's, and initially carried a rifle. Although he only just got in. At 5'4", he was just 1 inch above the minimum height requirement, and many smaller men would be turned away and would only get their chance to serve when a Member of Parliament, Alfred Bigland, obtained permission to form his own battalion of shorter men. In fact, I'm thinking of telling the story of these men, Bigland's Bantams, in a future episode. Unlike the Powell's battalions, formed by eager young men joining up en masse in response to Lord Kitchener's "Your country needs you" posters, Coltman's battalion were a territorial army battalion. In other words, they were a reserve unit and thus were being readied for immediate deployment, unlike the raw Powell's. In fact, they were one of the first full TA battalions to be sent to France, arriving in March 1915, just 2 months after our market gardener from Burton had joined them. The 6th were part of the 46th North Midland Division of the 137th Brigade, and initially saw action at the Battle of Loos in the September of that year. It was whilst trapped in a shell hole one night and listening to the cries of the wounded in no man's land that Coltman came to the conclusion that he could not fire his rifle in anger and cause similar pain. He put in a request to become a stretcher bearer. Now, if you think that being a stretcher bearer was somehow a cushy number or well out of danger, then think again. Unarmed, these men would go out into no man's land, and whilst under sniper, machine gun and shell fire, locate and then carry wounded soldiers back to British lines, often through thick mud. One stretcher bearer unit recorded 42 of their number killed or wounded out of 48. Not only was their work dangerous and difficult, but it was hard too. Normally there would be 16 stretcher bearers assigned to a battalion of 1,000 men, and it would take 6 or even 8 stretcher bearers to lift the dead weight of a wounded soldier. Now imagine carrying that weight through the mud and churned up landscape whilst under fire. And now imagine that there are 100 wounded men out there needing your help. No wonder many of these teams worked until they dropped from exhaustion. William Coltman was sent on a 6-week basic medical and stretcher training course. During that time, he, like other stretcher bearers, was taught basic life-saving first aid. The role of stretcher bearers was to provide that immediate relief before carrying the wounded to the regimental aid post just behind the front line. Here a doctor, the regimental medical officer, and a small team of orderlies would provide a triage service. I've told the story of two of these medical officers who were awarded Victoria Crosses in previous episodes, Noel Shavas and Artin Martha Leake. They are two of only three men ever to be awarded the VC twice. Check out those stories later. I'll post a link in the description. From the regimental aid post, the more serious cases would be sent further back to the main advanced dressing station, and thence to hospitals if needed. So the stretcher bearers were a crucial part in the caring for the wounded process. Indeed, they were vital. And all they had to identify themselves to the enemy was a small white armband with the letters SB, stretcher bearer, in red. Sometimes a red cross would also be added. The 6th Battalion, North Staffordshire Regiment, were part of the 46th Division's attack on Goncourt during the opening day of the Battle of the Somme in July 1916. The attack was a catastrophic failure, and the 46th Division suffered over 2,400 casualties. That's a lot of work for stretcher bearers, and William Coltman was mentioned in dispatches for his work. The following year, February 1917, Coltman was awarded the Military Medal for rescuing an officer. The officer had been leading a small wiring party in no man's land when the mist that had been covering them lifted, and they came under fire from the German positions. The officer was shot in the thigh, and Coltman went forward by himself and carried him to safety. In July, he was awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal, when over several days he ventured out to evacuate the wounded under shellfire. His citation acknowledged that he undoubtedly saved many lives, and concluded, "His absolute indifference to danger had a most inspiring effect upon the rest of his men." Just a month later, he was awarded a bar to his military medal, in other words, the second time he was awarded this medal. This time it was for three acts of bravery, back in June, before he had received his DCM. The first occurred on the 6th of June, 1917, when an ammunition dump was hit by mortar fire. Coltman took it upon himself to run into the danger to remove a stock of Very Lights before they could explode. The following day, he took a leading role in tending the wounded when the company headquarters was also hit by German mortar fire. The third of the three events that led to his second military medal was when he dug into a collapsed tunnel to rescue the men inside. By the time he was once more recognised for his bravery in 1918, the war was turning in favour of the Allies. After the initial scare of the German spring offensive in 1918, the Allies had started to finally push the Germans back. In preparation for a major assault on the Germans' defensive position, called the Hindenburg Line, in September, the 46th Division moved forward to clear the area around Bellenglise, close to the St. Quentin Canal. Lance Corporal William Coltman once more went out to find the wounded, dressing and carrying many of them back to safety whilst under heavy artillery fire. He continued to work through the night and into the next day, without taking any rest, until all the wounded in front of their regiment had been brought back to their lines. For this action, he was awarded a bar to his Distinguished Conduct Medal. That day, the 29th of September 1918, the Allied assault on the Hindenburg Line began in earnest, with the North Staffordshires, part of the 137th Division, as it spearheaded the attack across the canal. The Battle of St. Quentin Canal was preceded by the greatest British military artillery bombardment of the war. 1,600 guns fired over 1 million shells onto the German positions. Through thick fog and smoke, the British infantry then used lifebelts and collapsible boats to cross the canal before scaling the steep banks on the far side to capture the German machine gun positions and a vital bridge across the canal. Over the following days, they broke into the forward positions of the Hindenburg Line. By the 3rd of October, they'd taken the main line and also the support line, and now the North Staffs move forward to attack the third supporting line, just to the northeast of the village of Sekar, about 5 miles east of the canal. In a bayonet charge, they reach the supporting trench, only to now come under heavy machine gun and artillery fire from the Germans overlooking them on the nearby Mannequin Hill. The infantry couldn't make any headway against that overwhelming firepower from above, and as more and more men fell, the commanding officer reluctantly ordered his men to fall back. And as they fell back under that murderous machine gun fire, they left their wounded comrades where they'd fallen. As they tried to regroup under cover, the cries of those wounded in front of Mannequin Hill filled the air. Men in pain. Men feeling very lonely and scared. Men knowing that they would die. Lance Corporal William Coltman remembered that night in his shell hole, that night that had tortured his Christian sense of compassion and had led him to lay down his rifle and take up a stretcher. He knew what he had to do now, and he ran forward. Men trying to find what cover there was available watched as the 5'4" man from Burton-on-Trent kept running. Bullets kicked up around him from the German enfilade fire. The soldier lying wounded in no man's land knew that his injuries were bad. He couldn't move, and from the pain as well as the blood, he knew he was going to die. Suddenly beside him was Coltman, breaking open his small satchel and administering first aid. Then the stocky little market gardener had picked up the wounded Tommy, and carrying him over his shoulders, he made his way, once more under fire, back to the rest of the regiment. For the next 48 hours, without any sleep, he went out into no man's land, administering first aid, collecting documents from the dead for their families, and on a further two occasions, carrying men over his shoulders to safety. Lance Corporal William Coltman was awarded Britain's highest medal for valour, the Victoria Cross. He received the VC from King George V at Buckingham Palace the following year. Back in his hometown, he was a hero, and crowds flocked to the railway station to welcome him home. Forewarned of the reception that he was about to receive, William Coltman VC jumped off the train one stop before Burton-on-Trent and walked the final few miles, slipping quietly into the family home. Demobilised in 1919, he did have one last role to play in regard to the First World War. On the 11th of November 1920, the coffin of Britain's unknown warrior was laid to rest at Westminster Abbey. It had been borne on a gun carriage down Whitehall in front of a silent crowd numbering thousands. Pausing at the cenotaph, the gun carriage then slowly moved on to Westminster Abbey. Either side of it was an escort of pallbearers drawn from Britain's most senior military commanders from the recent war. Included in that escort were Field Marshal Lord Haig, Field Marshal Lord French, Admiral Lord Beattie, and Air Chief Marshal Sir Hugh Trenchard. Behind them solemnly followed the royal family. The coffin entered the abbey to the choir singing, unaccompanied, O Valiant Hearts. Following a short service, the coffin was carried to the west end of the nave to be interred. As it made its way to its final resting place, it passed through a guard of honour formed by 100 holders of the Victoria Cross. Included in their number, William Coltman VC. With his Victoria Cross, two Distinguished Conduct Medals and two military medals, he was the most decorated member of that guard of honour. Returning to Burton-on-Trent, William became a gardener in the Town Parks Department. And whilst he would attend Staffordshire Regimental reunions, he would always take a back seat and rarely talked about his wartime experiences, even to his family. The only acknowledgement of the war was that he named his house Sequoire after the village near Manikin Hill. He and Eleanor were to have 2 children and 4 grandchildren, and remained married until 1948, when Eleanor died of cancer, aged 55. William Harold Coltman, VC, DCM and Bar, MM and Bar, died in 1974, at the ripe old age of 82. He's buried in the graveyard at St Mark's Church, Winsall, just on the edge of his hometown of Burton. He'd continue to attend Plymouth Brethren meetings until the very end. His medals were on display at the Staffordshire Regiment Museum, just outside Lichfield. Sometime before his death, William Coltman VC expressed the hope that future generations would know nothing of war, except what they read in books, and there would come a time where no Victoria Crosses would need to be awarded. Profound sentiments from a humble, deeply religious, and incredibly brave man. There are so many amazing stories from the First World War. I mentioned my episodes about Noel Chavasse and also Arthur Martin Leake, who were medical officers and both awarded the VC twice. And I've also told stories about two brave army chaplains, Theodore Hardy and Woodbine Willie. I've got plenty more stories from the First World War in the pipeline, including teenage VC recipient Jack Cornwell at the Battle of Jutland and some of the lesser known theatres of that war. I'm Chris Green, the History Chap. Thanks for joining me today. Keep well, and I'll speak to you again very soon.